Morning. Yep. Well, we're still studying about David today, and I struggled with this lesson preparing, but a little bit. We'll get into that later on, but we're seeing today how David will take matters in his own hands, and maybe he shouldn't, but have you ever done that? Have you ever had a situation to where something just angered you, upset you, and you decided, well, I'm going to take care of it myself without thinking through the situation first?
I think we did that in our prayer line. I couldn't help
the
technology. Yeah, I know.
But we'll see today how situations can cause us to react, maybe sometimes in a non-Christian way. What's happened is there was this leader or king, his name is, I'll call him Nabal. I don't know if that's a correct pronunciation. He was very, let's say, not affluent, but very strong in his power, had amassed a lot of wealth, but his demeanor wasn't what it really should be as far as being the type of person he was. And what has happened is some of his flock that he had amassed has wandered into, let's say, David's territory. Now, if you were a farmer and you had land and cattle and your next door neighbor had the same and his cattle came on to your property, what would you do? Would you just say, okay, they're here, just let them graze, eat up what's there for my cattle, or pick up the phone and call them and give them a piece of your mind, tell them either you come get them or they're going to belong to me? But that's what's happened. And if this lesson today was a movie, there's like five scenes. Is number one, David's men protected Nabal's shepherds and his cattle. Number two, Nabal has disrespected David. Then David will start down a path of retaliation. But then Nabal's wife gets involved, and she tries to tone down what's going on. But in the end, God punishes Nabal. Because what happens is, if you were like David, and this had happened to you, and let's say this went on for a long period of time, at some point in time, would you feel obligated to go to your neighbor and say, you know, your cows have been on my property for over a year now, and I haven't said anything to you, but I think I'm due some restitution. I think you owe me some money for taking care of your cattle. Is that the right thing to do?
Well, that's a human trait. That's patience. After a while, you lose your patience. It's kind of like your neighbor and your barking dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, after about four or five nights, how in a nice way do you tell them to shut their dog up? Or the cat that walks on your car, how do you tell people to do something with your cat?
So that every night.
But that's a human in us. That's the patience. You know, after a while, you just lose your patience. I've asked and asked, and nobody seems to want to help you.
Do we react quickly sometimes? I mean, the barking dog, do you ever walk out and throw something at it and hope nobody sees you, you know? Is that the right thing to do? But David, and I guess it's justified, he really felt like that Nabal should send him a gift for taking care of his shepherds and his animals, because his people have protected them for all this time. So he sent some of his men into Nabal's territory to request that. And they got turned down. Because if we see in verse 14, or just back up to verse 12, it says, David's men turned around and they went back. And when they arrived, they reported to David. And David told them, put on your swords. So they put on the swords and David put on his. It says about 400 men went up with David while 200 stayed with the supplies. Now one of the servants told Nabal's wife Abigail, David sent messengers from the desert to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us the whole time we were out in the fields near with them, and nothing was missing. It says, night and day there was a wall around us all the time we were herding our sheep near them. Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him. Have you ever been fearful of going to someone and saying, I need to talk to you? There's a situation, or there's something on my mind and I need to talk to you. Are you fearful of doing that because you already know how that person is, and you know that whatever you say to them nicely, in a good manner, they're going to be boisterous, they're going to lose control of their thoughts and what they say, they're just mean-spirited. So you never approach them. You don't ever say anything to them. This is not one of Nabal's workers, one of his servants. He knows he's that way. But he's telling his wife, why don't you go and talk to him and see, because no one can talk to him. We all know that. Well, Abigail begins, and I guess in her way, it doesn't say, but she shows wisdom in what she does. She, number one, she knew that Nabal had put everybody in danger because of his actions. And thinking through this, she decides and she gathers up an abundance of goods, food, whatever, to take to these people, to take to David. But this servant, in talking to her, he told her, he says, now, carefully consider what you do. Why do you think he would warn her of doing that? Against his own wife. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was interesting in verse 17. He does say, now carefully consider what you must do, because there is certain to be trouble for our master and his entire family. He is such a worthless fool. Nobody can talk to him. Well, the Hebrew definition of Nabal is fool. He's just that type of person. He's strong. He's wealthy. He's powerful, but he's stupid. Now, are there people like that in our world? Have everything, but don't know what to do with it. They just keep gathering more and more.
You would be very controlled.
True. So, do we sometimes deal with problems? We all deal with problems. But are there times when you have a problem or a situation that you really need to involve somebody else to talk about it and work through it? Are we skeptical in doing that?
I think some of us are. I'm guilty of this, and maybe all of us. Some of us. I'm not the most trusting person, so I'm very funny about what I would follow if I talk to somebody and who I talk to somebody. And I feel like I'm not the only person that way. You know, I mean, your best, I'm not saying your best, but I guess your strongest advocate, it would be your trainers. And so you don't know, I mean, did this person that was talking to Abigail, did he talk to Novel or somebody? Would he tell Novel that he was a scoundrel? Or would he tell Novel that he needed to change his actions because David would not have been so big to him?
No.
So, you know.
Because if he was going to do that, he would have just bypassed Abigail.
That's right. So that shows right there, even his people were fearful of telling him that he went to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and then he's warning his wife, so I'm sure that makes you feel like that in the past something has happened. Maybe Abigail kind of stepped off the path somewhere else, and she was maybe reprimanded in front of all these people by the
president. Sure. But if we take this a little bit back to last week's lesson, when Saul was angry and he ordered the servants to kill everyone in the household, and they didn't, but he had someone, Doeg, that he took it upon himself and killed everyone. Now, David has been involved in that. Now, could David have let control of it go of himself? And could David have let the anger that has built up in him just explode and take matters in his own hands? He's at that point because he has already gathered his servants and his people, his men, put on their swords, and we're going to attack them. Why would mild-mannered David get to that point? What would cause that, the rage, to come upon him? Well, I guess what I'm saying is, we're all guilty of that. Somebody makes you mad, first thing you want to do is retaliate.
Cut them off in the car.
Take your own life into your hands to try to solve a problem.
Well, that's true.
Whereas if you just let that person go, take your time, keep your hand off the horn, are you better off?
Yes.
Back off.
But you know, up here you can also use this about the fear. This is, you know, you could use this as an example in witnessing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know there's somebody that you need to talk to, but you also know their personality is very aggressive, opinionated, and, you know, I don't need what you're trying to tell me about the script, the Bible. Look at my life already. And it's kind of the same way in witnessing. You know, there are people that they don't need to hear what you got to tell them because they already have everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then angels are for you to think that they need the Lord in their life when you're sure listening. They've got it all, so why are you telling me about something that I can't people can't see that I have my house, my car. You know, people can't see what's on the inside of me, so I don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the same thing, fear.
But do we do like David? Because in verse 20, it talks about Abigail riding in on the donkey where David and his men were descending, and she met him. And David just said, "It's been useless, all my watching over his fellow's property in the desert, so that nothing of his was missing. He has paid me back evil for good." But verse 22, "May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him." What is David thinking about this right now? If I go ahead and do this, may God punish me severely if I leave one person alive. He already knows I've let this get out of control. I'm on my way to commit something that I really don't want to do. But he's also telling God, if I follow through with this, punish me. Would you be strong enough to say that to God? You know, "Lord, I'm fixing to go handle something. I really don't want to do it, but when I'm through, if I've destroyed everything in my life, punish me." That would be...
What we can do is do the deed and then ask for forgiveness.
Well,
but
he's asking for forgiveness.
But as we, you don't ask somebody to punish you. You just go do the deed and then come back and ask the Lord to forgive you for what you...
Mm-hmm.
That you would wrong somebody and you ask them for forgiveness. And as Christians, we are assured that we are forgiven.
Because the writer points out, if he had done this, first and foremost, David would have had blood guilt on his hands. He would have had murder on his hands. And it says all the goodwill that David had done all of his life and trying and won other people to him, how would his men react to him then? He's not the person that I thought he was. It says Israel, this writer says, if Israel would have judged him to be no better than Saul. You know, and we've studied Saul's works and what Saul did in the past. And it's letting David has seen this. And we gather that David did not want to be like Saul. But he would be judged to be just like him. And then what about David's men? Where would it leave them? Would they then, let's say, like maybe a nation that all of a sudden has no rule, no reign over them, everybody just goes crazy and they do what they want to do. They're out of control. They try to take everything into their own hands. Would David's men then just say, "Well, you know, that was easy to do. We're going to continue to kill people no matter what. And it's just going to build from there."
Now, our leader does it, we might as well
do it. We might as well do it too.
But we also see too, we've all had this in our lives, people that we put your trust in or you admired or the legacy you thought was enough. And then they do something and you're disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
You're disappointed because you couldn't. You never thought that they would be
that type of person.
Exactly. You know, and you look back on them, you look back and see all how they have been to that point. And we all know it only takes one thing.
But we we move forward to verses 32 through 35. And David is speaking to Abigail. And he says, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me." It says, "May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak." It says, "Then David accepted from her hand what she had brought him and said, 'Go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your request.'" What is Abigail's part here? She's the peacemaker. Now, does she feel like she's protected maybe her husband from harm? And did that elevate her, that I'm real powerful?
You're real powerful.
Something. Okay.
Well, do you think she had not heard about David and how David was?
I'm sure she had. Well, I mean, I'm sure that she
had heard
how David was and his actions and his means, and she probably knew what type of man he really was. So I go in peace to him, and I can calm this situation down. But it says, after this was over, and you think everything is okay, well, she goes back home, and Nabal, being the man he is, I'll just call him a party goer. He's got a big feast going on. He's all unaware of any of this. So she knows when she gets home, he's probably under the influence, and she can't talk to him. So she waits till the next day.
Yeah,
well, there. We'll turn it up like that. Now, is that the wise thing to do on her part? Or have you ever been in a situation to where you really want to go talk to somebody, but instead of waiting for the proper moment, you just barge in and "I need to talk to you right now"? Is that the right thing to do? Or do we need to sit down, think about it, and calm down a little bit? But now Nabal, the next day, you think he's a big, powerful man. He can take anything that comes at him, is what he puts out. People are fearful of him. But Abigail goes to him and tells him what's happened. Because she said she went to Nabal, she said in the morning when Nabal was sober, his wife told him all the things, and it says his heart failed him, and he became like a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal and he died. In a sense, was he a coward? If he was so big and powerful and mighty, and his wife comes in and tells him, "I've calmed down this threat against our whole family, everybody that's with us," don't you think he'd be strong enough to take that?
You think it made him so angry?
Or did he get so fearful? When fear strikes you, what happens to your body? Somebody, you know, you're in your car and somebody pulls out in front of you expectantly. You jerk. So did he have a heart attack? Or did he have a stroke? Because fear struck him real quick. Now, the story goes on. Nabal dies. David's back in his country. But we read some last week, and David pens a lot of words in the book of Psalms. And I'm going to read a couple of them. It's in Psalm 7, verses 4 and 5. He says, "If I have done harm to one at peace with me, or have plundered my adversary without cause, may an enemy pursue and overtake me." And then in Psalms 28 it says, "Do not drag me away with the wicked, with the evildoers, who speak in friendly ways with their neighbors, while malice is in their hearts." Do we, or have seen sometimes, that people think, if I'm evil enough, mean enough, I'll be rewarded with good things. I'm going to get what I want, no matter what my personality is or what my actions are. Now, as the story goes along, and now I'm going to admit something right up front. This is where I had a little problem. Is everything goes along and everything is good, but Abigail now is a widow, but she goes, she knows where David is, and she goes there, and David, her actions in the past, he takes her as his wife. Well, is David already married? Now, this is where I stumbled. It doesn't go on in our world today like that. But in those days, a woman left alone was in danger. They had no means to take care of themselves. She needed a home of a man. She needed a son to help her in her days. Now, I just admit, this is where I kind of had a problem and I had to read through this. What if that went on today? What if I walked in church today and I just got up in the pulpit and said, "I have an announcement to make. I'm taking this person over here to be my wife along with Susan." What would happen?
Y'all go home and get on your funeral clothes, and you come right back. Start off. But that being the custom.
That was the custom.
Now I'm going to come about this because, you know, I tell people it's a woman's world. But anyway, but that being the custom then, and she going, did he recognize that she had. Because that was the custom. Now, we don't do that now, so you have to kind of go back to that. He recognized that her heart was, I guess, in the right place. Does that make sense? That where David was and his walk with the Lord, did he see in her that she could have the same walk he does? So it would be, I hate to say, worth having her, but it would be beneficial to people that she came in contact with. Because we know, I mean, and we laugh about it because women were so mistreated in that particular time. I'm not saying that there are women now that aren't. But in that time, they were so belittled and looked at. It's so amazing to read the old stories like this in the Old Testament to see where the women, a woman played a very prominent part. It was very just kind of like people want to do now. You go into somebody's life and you do something good for them. You don't want all the bells and whistles. You just go in and you come out and you move on. So that's the way, like these stories on the women, like an Abigail or Ruth. They just go in and do what they, what God placed on their heart to do, and then they come out and they move on. It's not a major production.
Yeah.
And so did she have what David had in his heart that she would be able to go and do for other people? Because do we hear very much about her after this story? I don't think we do. I mean, I don't.
No, and this writer pointed out, and I don't, and I'll just be honest, I don't know David's history from there, but he writes that David's wives led to moral chaos in the household.
So he must have had some more.
Oh yeah, he had more wives than one. Because, I mean, he has a point. You put a family with a wife and children in a situation, and then you try to bring in others and blend in the same, it can cause jealousy, rivalries, all kind of situations.
Can you hear about that anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. And I just wonder how those women, because you see them on TV and they interview them, how they can be so accepting of each other.
But I guess what we should take from the lesson, and we've said this earlier, is a lot of times we do try to take matters into our own hands instead of asking God for His guidance and working in our lives before we act upon it. So.
And that's when chaos begins.
Yes.
And I mean, it's ironic that God.
You know, little who novel.
Yeah. Because what if he? I mean, you know, the story would have been different after Abigail with David. But it's ironic because he stayed. I mean, he died, and so that ended his meanness streak, I guess you could say.
Well, he could have been so mean, and yeah. Why did you go see David?
That's what I meant.
You know, so, I'm the head of the household. Why did you take it upon yourself to do my job?
But. Or David could have said, I've got a bachelor's soldier and I'm going to match make.
That's right. Yeah, I got somebody in my army that needs a wife.
Then he'd be taking matters.
That is taking matters.
Okay.
Well, that's all, Miss Lee. My mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.